Hello, Pod. I'm Chris Hewitt, and welcome to the latest episode of The Shameless Plug, the show in which I sit down every month, every 4 weeks, on the dot, and have a good old natter with Nick Desemlian, the editor of Empire Magazine, and we talk about the latest issue of... Hang on. Empire Magazine! Hello, Nick.
That's the one, Chris. That's the one.
How are you?
It's good. I see these as, you know, a therapy session, really. You know, we have a hard month, we make something... And then we sit down and we unpack it on our feelings in a safe space.
How does that make you feel?
Angry.
Yeah?
No, I feel good. I feel good. I feel, it's weird because by the time we get around to doing these, we're sort of, well, we are finished on the following issue. We're finishing it tomorrow.
Well, we're, yeah.
So we're in the thick of press week. So it seems a long time ago that we were four weeks exactly
from the moment that you last dotted the last T and crossed the last I.
Yeah, so a lot of this feels new to me. My memory is so terrible that I'm flicking through the issue and I'm like, oh yeah, we did that thing, didn't we?
This is good. Also, we're doing this for the first time in a two-person studio, Nick, so we're usually we have a great big wall of monitors between us, but right now I'm staring directly at you into your soul.
Unnervingly.
And I'm going to ask you one simple question, Nick Desemlian.
Yeah.
In the history of Empire Magazine, the editor has never put themselves on the cover, and yet, are those your abs on the cover?
Well, I had to put them somewhere. You know, it's been tough. I've been, you know, really crunching the metal, and it was time to unveil the goods to the world. Yeah, crunching metal. That's crunching what people in gyms say. I've been pumping some. Pumping some steel.
Let's not get into what you've been pumping. Let's talk about what's on the issue. What's on the issue? What's on the cover of Empire Magazine? This is issue, Nick.
Well, it's
451 Fahrenheit. Yes. 451. And presumably inside there's a massive celebration of Fahrenheit 451?
Possibly. Might be. I haven't got to that bit yet. But
we'll
yeah,
get to it. It's, if there isn't, I'm going to set this magazine alight.
Yeah. It is the issue that has the power. It is Masters of the Universe.
What?
We should probably say that before
I'm rambling on. Getting around to it.
Yeah, we have He-Man on the cover.
He-Man.
We have...
Da, 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 da.
So there's a few firsts. This is the first time my body has been on the cover.
Yes.
This is the first green talking tiger that we've had on the Empire cover.
That's the body Nick was talking about. And his body is the...
Yep.
Is it Battle Cat or Cringer on the cover?
Well, that's a very good question. I'm glad you asked that. There's been much debate about that. I don't know, 100%.
Yeah.
I think he has a noble and more confident face than one would expect from Cringer. So
he has a
but you can't
aspect.
See. You can't see.
There's no armor.
Whether he's got the armor on or not.
Yeah.
So is this Cringer? Is this Battle Cat? You'll have to buy the issue to find out. And even then, you won't find out.
This is exciting, Nick. This is by the power of Grayskull.
Yes.
Travis Knight's Masters of the Universe is the cover story in this month's issue of Empire Magazine, the April 2026 issue, issue 451. On the cover, Nicholas Galitzine as Prince Adam of Eternia himself. There he is, abs out. Also next to him, Nick?
Camila Mendes as Tila.
Camila Mendes as Tila, and a knight.
Yes.
Arise, a knight, sir.
We like a knight.
Idris Elba.
On the cover, we had Sir Ian McKellen last month for our Lord of the Rings celebration, and now we have Sir Idris Elba as Man at Arms.
Man at Arms.
And he has arms. Look at those arms.
He has lovely, lovely arms, and a great, great tash as well. So, yes, and then we obviously have potentially Battle Cat, and behind them... Castle Grayskull itself. Nick, what is this movie for people who do not know?
Well, if you remember the 80s, if you're around in the 80s, there was a very popular line of toys, Masters of the Universe. So this was kind of a reaction to Mattel not getting the rights for the Star Wars action figures or turning them down. I can't remember which one. But anyway, Star Wars obviously went on to be huge and sold a lot of toys. So Mattel came up with their own line of toys, Masters of the Universe. With He-Man as the central one, and it became massive. It was a phenomenon. Did you have He-Man toys, Chris?
I did have He-Man toys, yeah.
I was more of a G.I. Joe guy.
Were you?
I had, you know, Hawkeye and Road Pig, and G.I. all those
Joe
guys.
It was called something different over here, I think. Was it called Action,
Action
Force?
Action Force, yeah. But I had some He-Man stuff, but I was bigger on that. But obviously, He-Man was gigantic, and
he was gigantic. He was literally gigantic, and that's because the toys were based on an unsold series of wrestling toys that Mattel had knocking around. So they were like, "What can we craft? Can we craft a story that explains how beefy these people's biceps are?" And it was a kids' cartoon as well, when people of a certain age were growing up. And it was absolutely huge, just like Adam of Eternia's pecs. And complete nonsense, but I loved it. Yes, I had quite a few He-Man toys. I had He-Man. Didn't have that many, but I had Ram Man. Do you remember Ram Man?
Yeah, his power was just to run into
just
stuff.
Ram things,
just
yeah.
Ram stuff.
And the toy, you actually pressed down on his head and he clicked into place, and you pressed the little button by his ankles and he popped up and rammed things.
They were a lot of fun. I mean, we've got a sidebar on this article on the cover story with some of the more, let's say, silly characters. Mm-hmm. Mosquito, who has the face of a mosquito.
I mean, there's a character called He-Man.
Well, that
you're
is
starting
true.
Pretty silly.
That is true. But his snout spout, Buzz Off, who is a bodybuilder bee.
Yeah, okay.
A bee debuilder. But I watched a documentary about Master Universe recently. There's one on Amazon Prime. And I was surprised at how many He-Man historians there are. I didn't know that was a job.
Historians.
But there are multiple people who get a little credit there as He-Man historian.
Does that pay? That
sounds like a fun job.
Do you think that pays well? Because I am looking for an out, so I'm just wondering.
You get paid in swords.
That's exciting.
We could retrain Chris, maybe. All right,
we could. So the cartoon was a huge hit. In 1987, this was turned into a rather forgettable, lamentable, terrible movie starring Frank Langella as Skeletor. We haven't even mentioned Skeletor, who is the bad guy behind all of this. And Dolph Lundgren. As He-Man. And Courtney Cox was in that as well. Dreadful movie.
Yeah.
And it was meant to be the start of a series, and obviously that ground will hold very, very quickly. And since then...
I will say Frank Langella is good in that film. And actually, like, you know, he's giving it all... The Skeletor, obviously, he's just wearing, like, some prosthetics and doesn't look that convincingly like a skeleton man. However, he is good in it and he fully commits. And he's in this documentary talking about how proud he is of that performance, and he really approached it like Shakespeare. So it's worth watching just for that, but literally just for that.
So He-Man has lain dormant on the big screen for nearly 40 years. And I'll be honest, when I heard they were remaking this, my eyes rolled back into my head and I thought, no, come on. There's no way this could possibly be good or fun. And then I discovered that Travis Knight was directing it.
Yeah.
And I turned completely around, did a 180. Not a 360, because I'd be back where I started, but a 180.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of directors have tried to, you know, it's prime IP, and a lot of directors have tried to get a movie off the ground, including John Woo and John M. Chu and other directors called John, whose names rhyme with that. But it is Travis Knight who has finally done it. And yes, I'm like you. I actually got to go to Portland and spend a day with Travis Knight for his new movie. He's got a new Leica stop-motion animated film called Wildwood coming out later this year.
In case you don't know, Travis Knight he owns Leica, right? Leica's his studio?
Yeah. It's his studio. Yeah. And he directed Kubo and the Two Strings. He also did Bumblebee, the best Transformers film. And he is a really interesting, talented, creative guy who has really good instincts and has not made a bad film yet. So I think the fact he's attached to this really makes it hopeful and exciting.
Yeah, very much so. The trailer for this looks really, really fun. It has a sort of Guardians of the Galaxy, Thor Ragnarok vibe to it, not just in terms of the color palette, but in terms of it's slightly glib and knowing and self-mocking. It knows how ridiculous it is, and it's about Prince Adam of Eternia, played by Nicholas Galitzine, who, by the way, was, maybe still be, I don't know, but grew up an Empire reader, and I presume is an Empire podcast listener. So Nicholas, if you're listening to this, and I know you are, do please blink twice and we'll get that signal. But Prince Adam in this has been banished to Earth, but he doesn't know that he's Prince Adam, I believe. And so it's all about him reconnecting with his legacy and rediscovering that he's He-Man. It's very exciting.
But a lot of it is going to happen on Eternia, which is exciting because the 80s movie, the Dolph Lundgren one, stayed on Earth and frankly suffered for it. and didn't really feel like full on fantasy, whereas this is really going for it. And you're going to get not just Skeletor, but a whole host of Rogues Gallery, He-Man Rogues Gallery. You're going to get Battle Cat. You're going to get a lot of surprises. I'm hearing good things about this. I'm hearing things. And I'm genuinely excited for it. But yeah, we sent Dan Jolin.
He-Dan.
Who else could we send? He's the closest thing.
I mean, literally anyone.
He's the closest. Yeah. It's the closest thing we have to He-Man, which says a
I'm
lot
going to interrogate that statement, Nick. What do you mean? Dan, who's shorter than me, which is saying something. He's the closest we have to Ram-Man. I don't think he's the closest we have to He-Man.
He told me that as he was leaving the set, he got to go around Castle Grayskull and all that, and Nicholas Galitzine was on a treadmill, and he invited Dan to join him. Not on the same treadmill, presumably, but on one next to him. And Dan politely declined, which was maybe the wisest course of action in that situation.
What if Dan had died?
Yeah.
If Dan had died, would you have given him the subs cover?
No. Don't be silly.
What?
No.
You're saying if one of us dies on Empire Duty, we're not going to get the subs cover?
Absolutely not.
That's fine.
Well, we'll see if it's a slow month.
Okay.
yeah, Dan got to sit on Skeletor's throne, and he had a pretty wild day watching shit go down in Eternia.
Shit went down. Oh my God, shit went down. And Dan has captured that excitement in his opening sentence for the feature, which is, Empire is in Eternia. Thanks, Dan. He goes on to explain other things.
There is more. Yeah,
there is more. There's about 3,000 more words.
We never saw him again. He just disappeared into a portal,
He just filed 4 words and went, that's it. Thanks very much. But Nick, Dan has sent you some He-Man gold, right?
Well, that's what I just told
He-Man
you.
Is it He-Man or
He-Man? I literally just gave you that gold.
Yeah, so but that wasn't gold. Give me more gold.
That was well, okay, all right. Dan is revealed exclusively for this podcast that Skeletor's throne is very bony.
Wow. This is the shit that was too bad to get into the feature.
There is a story he gave me, but it's not suitable for a podcast.
It's not. It's suitable for this podcast, but
yeah.
You're not going to say it, are you?
I'm not going to say it.
All right. No. Tease the reader. This is exciting. No, we have amazing first look pictures from this. Dan interviewed loads and loads of people. It's really, really, really cool. We have a first look at Skeletor himself. Oh.
Alison Brie as Evil Lyn. And there is a character we can confirm exclusively in this film called Fisto. So it's not Chekhov, but it's going to be a lot of fun.
If you get that toy, but you have to build it yourself, is that a Fisto kit? Anyway, that's exciting. This looks really, really cool, and it is out later on this year, June the 5th. That is when Masters of the Universe will be hitting cinemas. I think it's going to be a rollicking good time. Let's move on, shall we, to the next feature, which was written, what's the word? Curated by me, I think. Not really written by me. It says words, Chris Hewitt, but most of the words here are actually from Rennie Harlan himself, because this is a feature celebrating Rennie Harlan, who has a new movie out called Deep Water later on in the summer, and has as its centerpiece a terrifying plane crash sequence. And it got us thinking about how Rennie Harlan, through his career, has marshaled some incredible set pieces, from the opening of Cliffhanger to Sam Jackson's unfortunate speech in Deep Blue Sea to the escape from the cockpit that Bruce Willis does in Die Hard 2, all sorts of stuff. And we thought, who better to explain these set pieces than Rennie Harlan himself? So we got him on Zoom, and I spoke to him for over 2 hours.
He's a real talker, isn't he? I interviewed Rennie Harlan in 2020, and this film, I will wager, may not exist were it not for me, because at the end of this interview, he said we had been talking about Deep Blue Sea a little bit and his love of sharks and how great a shark movie that is. And he said, I'm thinking about doing another movie involving sharks. Do you think I should?
Whoa.
Or maybe I shouldn't. I don't know. I can't decide. I said, Rennie, you've got to do it. If it's got sharks in it,
you've
please do it.
You've got to do it, Rennie.
And hence, this film exists purely because of me. Maybe.
What?
Maybe. I'm not saying I want to cut if it makes a lot of money. But anyway, no, he's great. And at the end of, I interviewed him for 2 hours. And at the end of that interview, he said, I've been on a, guess what, Nick? I've been on a treadmill this whole time. And I was like, wow, okay.
And was the treadmill moving? Because that's more impressive. If
maybe
so.
Nicholas Gillitson was on it.
Had Dan declined to stand next to Rennie Harlan? Yeah.
Dan had relinquished it and Rennie popped on. But no, Rennie Harlan is a great, great talker. He's
yes,
got great
he is.
Stories. He's done some amazing sequences. I love the cliffhanger sequence that opens cliffhanger. As spoofed by Ace Ventura, When Nature Calls, Jim Carrey saves a raccoon. The Nightmare on Elm Street 4, the pizza with the faces on it. I mean,
it's all there.
So you've got some good anecdotes.
He was on terrific form. Really, really loved doing that. Loved talking to Rennie. And hopefully he'll be on the Empire podcast at some point. All right, moving on. Nick, Ready or Not, Here I Come is the name of the sequel to Ready or Not, which was a surprise hit when it debuted a few years ago, directed by Radio Silence, a.k.a. Matt Bettinelli, Ulpin, and Tyler Gillette, and starred Samara Weaving as a woman who got married into a very, very rich family and then was told she had to play a game where that rich family tried to hunt her down and kill her, and if she survived until morning, she would survive, and bad things would happen to the family. And spoiler alert, here's a sequel, so I think you can guess how that movie ends, although I don't think you can guess how it specifically ends. And it's been a while. But they're back. Radio Silence are back. Samara Weaving's back. And she's brought back up in the form of Catherine Newton.
Yeah.
And Beth Webb.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a banging cast. Elijah Wood is in it. It's got David Cronenberg in it.
Yes.
It's got all kinds of...
Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Yeah, Sarah Michelle Gellar. It feels like they're kind of going in a sort of John Wick-y direction where the first one was a success and now they're expanding the mythology and they're bringing in all these new characters and new families. And so this time the heroes are being hunted by multiple groups. And I haven't seen it yet, but I'm looking forward to it. Beth got to go to the set, and she got to ride in a golf buggy with Sarah Michelle Gellar. I'm pretty jealous about that. So Sarah Michelle Gellar, who was holding a dueling pistol. So you can't ask for a better set visit than that, really. But yeah, it's exciting. Radio Silence are, of course, doing the next Mummy film. There's a lot of excitement for that.
Yeah, there is. There is a lot of excitement for that. And there's a lot of excitement for this as well. The first movie was a decent-sized hit when it came out, but it has really snowballed. I think in the pandemic, a lot of people discovered it. It's on Disney Plus right now. And so this sequel is a bigger proposition in many, many ways. I think the expectations are a little bit higher as well than they were of the first film. And Beth went to Toronto, one of my favorite cities. So I hope she had an amazing time. She came back and she wrote the following opening sentence. By the way, I didn't do an opening sentence for Rennie Harlan because there is no opening sentence for Rennie Harlan. It's all in his voice.
Shark ate it.
And I don't... Yes, that's what my excuse was. Where's your intro? Shark ate my intro. I don't want to do a Rennie Harlan impression because he's the size of a snowmobile and would punch me in the face, probably. So here is Beth's opening line. The moment where... This is a quote. The moment where I went, okay, this is a crazy time, was when people were getting tattoos of my face on their shins. And that's a quote from Samara Weaving.
Do you have a tattoo of Samara Weaving on your shin?
No, I've got a tattoo of Samara Weaving's shin on my face.
I was wondering what that was.
Yeah.
But yeah. No,
it's not very clear. It's just, to the untrained eye, it just looks like a shin. But it's Samara Weaving's shin.
Thanks for specifying and clearing that one up. This is a great read. And Beth got some really great information out of them. The story for this film was broken in a Las Vegas casino in the Bellagio. That's where they came up with this story.
What?
Have they hit the jackpot? We'll
all
find out.
All bets are off.
In mid-March.
We will. Next feature is something we did a shoot for, Nick. It is an interview with James McAvoy, the great actor James McAvoy, as he becomes, hopefully, a great director as well with his directorial debut, California Schemin. And we sent Jimmy Famuyiwa along to interview him. So it's a Q&A. With James McAvoy, who is one of my favorite people in this industry, and I think that his personality really comes across in this. He's very, very sharp and witty.
James McAvoy was the first person I ever interviewed for Empire.
Was he?
And we were sitting on beanbags. It was for a film called Inside I'm Dancing.
Oh, yes, 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 yes.
He was a lovely fellow. Could not have asked for a nicer person to have that experience with. And, you know, 20 plus years on, he's still really exciting, making interesting, cool stuff. He's stepping up and directing for the first time with this film, California Scheming. And it's a really cool time to catch up with him. And he is on great form. As always, we also did our own shoot for this. Zoe McConnell shot him, and it's really colourful and fun and vibrant, and so is his film.
So is his film. Jimmy took time out from being on MasterChef long enough to write this feature. His first line is a quote from James McAvoy. How do I do this? I've got to put my usual voice through the Scott-o-meter. One of the things I'd say about my career is that I've never really inhabited just a single character type for very long.
You went full Shrek there. That was alarming and offensive. Yeah, just wildly offensive. Let's move on. But no, this is it's a hate crime.
It's not a hate crime. I love the Scots.
But yeah, he talks about, every time we want to do one of these big Q&As, you still want to have a kind of an angle and sort of a theme to the interview. And here it's McAvoy talking about why he's fascinated in just so many different types of characters.
Yeah.
You know, and this film, California Scheming, is about two Scottish lads who are pretending to be American. And there's always like, to James McAvoy's own characters, the ones he plays as well, there's always like multiple facets and... obviously split, but going right down to pretty much anyone you can imagine, there's lots of different elements. So he talks all about that and why that's like really appealing for him.
Yes, indeed. Very much so. That is a terrific, terrific feature. Next up, complete contrast, is The Magic Faraway Tree. It's a feature by The Magic Faraway Tree, the classic book by Enid Blyton.
Book, sir.
I believe books.
These were big for me. He-Man wasn't so big in my childhood, but The Magic Faraway Tree weirdly was.
Like, I never read any of these.
Consume them. I once had a terrible nightmare about the Sandman, because there's the idea is there's a tree. Every time you go up it, there's a different land, and they rotate. And so some of these lands are good. There's like the land of birthdays where you get presents and cake. Some of the lands are bad and scary and ominous. And if you stay in the land too long, it takes you away and you have to stay there until it comes all the way around again.
Which could be forever.
I don't know. Maybe. My faraway mythology is a little bit rusty. But basically, there is one land where there is the Sandman who puts sand in your eyes and you fall asleep and then you miss the tree leaving and it's terrible.
Oh, my God.
And so I remember being quite freaked out by him. But yes, this is... as the headline for this article says, Out of Their Tree. It is a truly deranged project. But with great people involved, and Simon Farnaby being uppermost among them, I would say, as the writer of this. Also the director.
Ben Gregor. Yeah.
Ben Gregor. And a lot of interesting people involved. Michael Palin's in this. Andrew Garfield and Claire Foy are in this. There's a load of youngsters. There's a lot of talented people, and I am fascinated to... find out what this film is.
Yeah,
it looks
colorful,
insane. Yeah, it looks
demented.
Mad. And there is a character in this called Saucepan Man who is a man covered in saucepans. And he's there on our opener. And we sent Alex Godfrey along, our features editor, and he did an amazing job of, he's really, he shares my excitement for it. And yeah, has come back and filed a truly incredible story, which is hilarious and unexpected. Let's say, but he did at one point ask Saucepan Man, or rather the actor playing him, what's under the saucepans, and the man said rage.
Okay, well, this sounds great. Rebecca Ferguson's in it as well. I don't know if you mentioned her. This looks absolutely bonkers, and hopefully it can capture some of that old Paddington magic from Simon Farnaby.
Yeah,
so,
it looks it looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. It's Dustin Demery Burns, the actor who plays Saucepan Man. I want to give him his sauce props.
Indeed. All right, by complete contrast, Nick, we then have a feature about the most depressing movie ever made.
I do love the pivot it from Magic Faraway Tree to Fred's.
Yeah, is that deliberate?
When you're
sitting down and you're figuring out
it's
where
the
to put
last
the features.
Thing that we do, really, right? Where we do a run through on the week where we finish the issue press week, and that's the point where we move things around and we kind of come up with the flow of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And some of that is looking at the design, so you don't want any too repetitive looking things to be next to each other or too similar things. Other times, you want it to be a little bit jarring, and I think it tickled us, Magic Faraway Tree, segueing into the bleakest film ever made.
Which is?
Fred's. Mick Jackson's Fred's. A film which features a melting E.T. toy, but also many other deeply unpleasant things. So this is the Sheffield set nuclear disaster thriller. I don't know, is it even a thriller? It's just bleak and
it's
depressing.
Not thrilling,
no. Well, we call it a thriller, so we should probably.
I'm going to quibble with that.
Okay. All right. Well,
sorry,
is Fred's a thriller? Write in, please. But yeah, it's. When was it made?
It was made in the mid 80s. It was made around 83, 84, something like that.
Yeah. And it's one of those films you hear about before you see it because it's got such a reputation of just being a film that you watch and then for the next week you are just trudging around feeling hopeless and terrified. And it holds up. I saw it for the first time only a couple of years ago, and it had that effect on me. I watched it on a nice, beautiful summer's day and then just felt depressed.
It just really captures what life in Sheffield is like. I'm only joking. I say that because Dick went to university in Sheffield.
I did. And it wasn't anything like Fred's. There were no melting toys or cannibalism. But, it's a film that is endured and they are remaking it.
Are they?
They are remaking it.
Who's they?
Warp.
Warp Films.
Yeah, Warp Films, Sheffield-based film production company. And actually, Mick Jackson, so we spoke to Mick Jackson, our writer for this, by the way, a new writer for us, Daniel Dylan Ray, and he spoke to Mick Jackson. And Mick Jackson quibbled with Warp's synopsis of the remake. Because they at one point in their sort of release announcing it, it's not been filmed yet, to the best of my knowledge, but in a press release, they said that this film is going to highlight how resilience and connection can offer hope, even in the most challenging of times. And Mick Jackson said, you shouldn't use the word hope anywhere near Fred's. The whole point of it is just there is no hope if this happens.
Oh, it's extraordinarily bleak. Like, you think the nuclear war itself is the bleakest part of the film. No, it's not. It gets worse.
Yeah.
Threads is a film that once seen is very, very difficult to forget. I did a big piece on this in my section a couple of years ago with Mick Jackson as well. This is a film, I wouldn't say it's my favorite film or one of my favorite films, but if you
it makes for a great double bill with Happy Gilmore. But Fred's first and then Happy Gilmore, that's very important. But
watch House of Dynamite and then watch this afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, it's I would say it's a much more powerful film than House of Dynamite, and it lingers with you, and it's not just about the horror of the actual bomb and even the fallout. It's about society disintegrating, and it's about that, you know, people turning on each other and anger and despair, and basically Empire Press Week. It really captures that same spirit. But no, this is a fantastic read, and if you haven't seen Fred's, well, double bill it with Happy Gilmore.
Indeed.
But do check it out.
Oh shit, I forgot to do Alex's first line for the Faraway Tree feature, which is, saucepan man saunters over for a chat, shaking Empire by the hand, clanking up a storm. Right, okay. And then Daniel Dylan Ray's opening line for Threads is, by September 23rd, 1984, autumn was settling in, the nights were getting darker, and the air a little chillier.
I feel like this whole first line experiment is not entirely fair to some of the writers, because sometimes you're setting up something.
I was taught by my English teacher, Mr. Neeson, to always write a first sentence that grabbed you. He didn't say by the chaffers, that's Alan Partridge, but like got the listener's attention right away.
My entire career,
I have strived not to do that, as you can tell, Nick.
you've yet to write.
I've yet to write a good sentence.
But these are all, I would say all of these are great first sentences.
Well, I don't have a good first sentence in my Rennie Harlan, but I think I do have a good first sentence in the first bit of my section. which is the Final Cut section, which is the home entertainment section. And for the opener for that, it's always a 4-page Q&A with a director or an actor. This time it is Rian Johnson talking about Wake Up Dead Man and also the Benoit Blanc trilogy. And my opening line is, Rian Johnson is puffing away on a cigar almost as big as his head. Exaggeration, Nick. It wasn't as big as his head. It was pretty big.
No wonder people are losing faith in the fake news media.
It was as long as both of his ears strung together.
Okay. All right. Well, look, it's for the sake of brevity, it's a good first line. Let's move on.
It's a good first line and a really good interview with both Rian Johnson.
So let's fly through
as
this.
Well. But you give my section the respect it deserves, you motherfucker. We also have Vince Gilligan talking about Pluribus. We have a story of the shot on Who Framed Roger Rabbit. We have a piece about I Swear with Robert Arameo and Kirk Jones, the director, and Embeth Davids is this month's time capsule. She's had a really fascinating career, and she was really good on that career when I showed her a bunch of pictures from it. So, yeah, there we go. Let's go to the front of the magazine.
All right.
We've already done the best section, which is my section.
Let's memento it.
We are running rapidly out of time, hence the sudden alacrity. But, Nick, what's happening in Beth Webb's section, the first word section? We should always say that John Nugent's section, the reviews section, is excellent. And if you want to know what we think about movies and TV shows and games and books that are out this month and going into last month as well, check that out. It's fantastic.
And The Secret Agent is the lead review this month, which is maybe a bit unexpected. It's a smaller film, but it's one that we saw, we loved, we gave it the 5 shiny red stars, and you should go and see it because it's out right now.
And if you thought that was unexpected, you'll see what the opener is next month.
Indeed. There's a lot going on. So we got a reported piece on video game movies. Are they the new superhero movies? We say maybe. We're looking at this new trend where, you know, everything from Split Fiction, which is a game I am playing and loving at the moment, that's getting turned into a Sydney Sweeney film, to The Legend of Zelda, to Zach Cregger's Resident Evil film. Can't wait for that.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on, so we're unpacking all of that. We talk about the Hollywood sign and its interesting history of, Sydney Sweeney just covered it with bras and...
Same.
Did you say same?
Same.
Oh,
yeah.
Right, okay.
I'm always covering the Hollywood sign and bras.
Right. Okay. The Scream, we talked to Kevin Williamson. He's back for Scream 7. He's been away from the franchise for ages. Beth spoke to Lisa Kudrow.
Yeah.
And had Zoom connectivity issues. I asked Beth for an anecdote about this interview, and she said that the Zoom, Lisa Kudrow had to move to another room to get a better signal. And, that was a great interview. That's about the comeback. I love the comeback. Wow. It's an amazing HBO cringe comedy, beloved by David Bowie. Lisa Kudrow talks about how David Bowie
loved the comeback.
Used to ask for episodes.
That's exciting.
What else have we got? We talk about manga. We look at Hollywood's increasing manga fixation. We talk to the writers of Project Hail Mary.
Yeah, which from all reports so far, Nick, is an absolute stormer of a movie.
Yeah.
So I'm very much looking forward to seeing that one. That's Andy Weir, who wrote the novel, and Drew Goddard, who adapted it.
Yeah. And just two final things. My favorite headline of the issue, the notorious P.I.G., which is a deep dive into Miss Piggy, who is having her solo moment. There's Emma Stone, Jennifer Lawrence are making a Miss Piggy movie. Bring it on. And finally, John Hamm, Pint of Milk. Now, we have been trying to get John Hamm to do Pint of Milk.
Right.
For as long as I can remember, we finally tracked down our quarry and it was worth it.
Wow.
He is very funny and entertaining. He reveals some of his nicknames.
Okay. What are they? I mean, I've got it here. It's what you'd expect.
Yeah.
He's been Ham and Cheese, Hammer Time, Ham Bone.
Do you think Hamnet will enter the lexicon? Do you think anyone's going to start calling him Hamnet?
I think we should. Hamlet, Hamnet. How about the notorious P.I.G.? That would be good.
Well, he came to the office for a web chat and noticed a sticker that we randomly had on a cupboard that said, I love Ham. I love Ham.
Yeah.
And he pointed at it. And it was
we have a picture of John Hamm.
We have a picture. But he brought that picture up himself when he did this Pint of Milk. He mentioned that picture himself and brought it up. And
He asked. He asked where it was.
He asked,
and where is it?
I've got it, so we should share it with
him. Have you got it? The picture or the sticker? I think he wanted to know where the sticker was.
I haven't got the cupboard. No, I didn't take the cupboard, but I've got the photo. He wants the sticker.
He wanted to know if we still had the sticker.
It's unreasonable.
Well, yeah.
It's ages ago.
The sticker was laid off some time ago.
But anyway, we got John Hamm.
We got him.
He told us how much he thinks a pint of milk is. Buy the issue to find out that answer.
Hey, Nick.
Chris.
Ham and He-Man almost had the same number of letters.
Right.
Did you... Was that intentional?
Ham and He-Man.
Ham-Man. Ham-Man.
Not sure what's happening here.
I think we're
I think this marks the end of this episode. If you stuck with us, why?
Yeah. Hey, Nick, I'm on form and contents. I'm absolutely fucking firing and contents. Video game movies. How they're sweeping Hollywood after the success of Ruben Östlund's The Triangle Circle L2 of Sadness.
That's genuinely good.
Do you get the one about Scream 7?
Yes, you're screaming the number 7.
Thank you.
Yes.
Pint of milk. I genuinely was about to say, Nick, there's a typo in the pint of milk, but it's deliberate.
This is good.
And there's even a reference to Scott Aukerman's and Adam Scott's Are You Talking R.E.M. Re-Me in there. So that's good. I'm excited about that. Well, John Hamm is a regular guest on Comedy Bang Bang, by the way. So, and yet, I don't believe he's ever been on the Empire podcast. Sort it the fuck out. Hambone, Hamnet, Hamman, Hamman.
Hamnet, it's going to stick.
Hamnet's going to
stick. If you see John Hamm in the street, shout Hamnet at him and tell us it's from us.
Slap a sticker on him saying, I love Hamnet.
Yeah. One of my favorite all-time interviews, if anyone is still with us, but one of my favorite all-time...
Of course it's still
one of my favorite all-time interviewing experiences was in Atlanta. I went there for Baby Driver and I ended up...
Sorry, Nick, that's all the time we have.
Hey, I ended up talking... I ended up sitting in the middle of a road. Well, it wasn't in the middle of the road. It was on the side of the road. It was on the pavement. And we talked about Garth Marenghi's Dark Place, John Hamm and I. And he was a lovely, lovely fellow.
He is a lovely, lovely man. I have interviewed him, but I don't think ever on the podcast. I might be wrong about that. What am I, a walking spreadsheet? Anyway, on that note, that is it for this episode of The Shameless Plug. Shorter than usual, but I think you'll agree we made up for it with Vim and Figure, Nick.
Vim Vendors
and
Brian Vigger, our two favourite directors. Yes, thank you for listening and send us some questions. Do send us some questions.
Send questions.
Well, I have questions.
I'll put a shout out. But we need to have time to do the listener questions thing. And we at the moment, we don't have time. But we will have time at some point. But anyway, goodbye, Nick.
Goodbye. See you next time.
See you next time. Do you want to go see Threads?
Yeah, why not?
Do you recognise locations from Sheffield when you're watching it? After the bombing.
They don't really look that. I mean, I think you can see a melted Broomhill Friary at one point. I'll have to watch it again and freeze frame.
Yeah, but if you touch a fucking brick of the Crucible Theatre in Sheffield, I'll have your head, nuclear bomb people. Anyway, on that note.
I once got asked if I wanted to DJ back to back with Steve Davis.
Really?
While he was in town.
Why are you saying this at the end of the podcast?
We'll talk about it next time.
Oh my God.
Come back next time.
It's the most interesting thing you've ever said. Oh, that's extraordinary. Thanks for listening. See you next time. Bye bye.